Corporate megastores are spending millions lobbying DC politicians on one-sided policies that send small businesses tumbling. They want to enact harmful credit card mandates that take resources away from your local credit union and community bank, leaving Main Street businesses with less access to credit, making it harder for your family to pay for everyday goods like gas and groceries. Tell Congress to guard your card and oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card mandates.
Paid for by Electronic Payments Coalition.
Hey guys, welcome to this week's fun episode of TFL's Car Chat. This is our podcast, and today we're going to be doing something unusual. We're not in the studio, but we're going to be doing a fleet update, showing you the cars that we own and what our plans are with them. And we thought we'd start with perhaps the two cars that mean the most to myself and Tommy. Isn't that right, Tommy?
Yeah, that's right. So we have my Aston Martin and, of course, the 1987 911, which has been back to the shop yet again. But in this video, we're going to talk about the whole fleet. So we're going to start here at the office and then go up to the ranch and show the cars that we have up there.
Yeah, and if you guys want to watch this on YouTube, just head on over to TFL Talk, which is our podcast channel, or just listen and we'll describe what we have. So tell me, what are you standing in front of?
So this is my 2007 Aston Martin V8 Vantage. Now, this is my dream car as a kid, and I picked this up a couple months ago for $33,000. So the company had bought it originally, and then I bought it off the company. But this has been a great car to own. So, you know, when you hear old British car, you think very expensive to maintain and repair, but these cars use a lot of Ford bits and bobs as well as Volvo bits and bobs, so they're actually fairly reasonable to keep on the road. Now, I've only put a few thousand miles on it in the last few months, but it has been an absolute pleasure to own and to drive. I'm still very scared of driving it because it feels like a very expensive thing, but it's a beautiful machine.
Now, there's a fun story behind this, behind the scenes, so to speak, and that is when we first bought this car, Tommy, you found it at the dealership where we usually buy our trucks, Brighton Ford, and we were in Japan, and you saw this car for sale, and then the guy who bought this actually took it to Aston Martin and had him do a complete inspection on it and find everything that was wrong with it. And in the end, he decided, or she decided, not to buy it. But we thought to ourselves, you know, these are beautiful cars. They're classic cars. This is your dream car. So we bought it for the company. But there was a little bit of a kicker. And that is, when I went to insure it with Hagerty, they said that you couldn't drive it.
Yeah, they were very adamant. So then when I bought it, I needed to find insurance. And funny enough, I got transferred to like a specialized department within Hagerty, and I talked to the lady, and she's like, well, have you driven expensive cars? And I said, yes, I have. Have you owned any fast cars? And I said, sort of. And she said, yeah, we can insure it. And it's actually fairly inexpensive to insure. I think it's like $80 or $90 a month, which is pretty reasonable for what was a $120,000 car, brand new. But these cars are becoming incredibly good values now. So $35 to $40 will get you one. They could be had with a manual or an automatic transmission. My hair is going everywhere today.
Do you have the key to this by any chance?
I do not.
Why don't you get the key? Because I want to show them the inside, because the inside is absolutely gorgeous. And I'll keep talking about what happened when we bought it. So when I went to insure it and I said, hey, I want to put my son on this, Hagerty said, well, we consider this a supercar, and we can't have somebody of Tommy's age, which is 27, which isn't all that young anymore, driving a supercar. And I thought to myself, 385 horsepower, how is that a supercar? I mean, we, you know, commonly have been driving like the Hummer EV, which has twice that amount of horsepower, and yet for some reason Hagerty thought that this was a supercar, but then when Tommy bought it, it was all fine, so in the end it all turned out well. And if you guys are wondering about this car, you remember that fact that Tesla started doing cars with no door handles, or at least hidden door handles? Well, back, what, 20 years ago, the Vantage had hidden door handles.
Yep, so it's got the little slide-away handles, it's got the butterfly doors, and it's in pretty nice shape. This car has like 48,000 miles on it. And it's got the black leather interior. Black would not have been my first choice for one of these, but with kind of the tan inserts, it's actually pretty nice. But yeah, what's aged these cars really nicely is it's got buttons and switches and knobs, so it doesn't have big screens. It does have one little screen here which pops up, which has since left the chat. But apart from that, everything else works. All the buttons and the knobs and the controls work exactly like they're supposed to.
Yeah, and the great thing about buying a classic car, what year is this, Tommy?
07.
Is that all the issues are known at this point. So a lot of people have owned them. And like that screen is out of a Volvo, actually. Mm-hmm. And there's a little gear set that breaks. And so actually, if you go online, you can figure out how to fix it. It's not that hard. But what really makes this vehicle so much fun is, you want to pop the hood and show them what's under the hood?
Sure.
And that's what makes it so cool. Because this, in its day, directly competed. Well, that's an 87, but it was a direct competitor to the 911.
Yeah, so this would have competed against 911 and then also the Audi R8. It's actually a little cheaper than this car back in the late 2000s. So that's actually the... This engine's funny because it sounds incredible. It's got a great wail to it, but this car's pretty slow. So 380 horsepower would have been very impressive 20 years ago by modern standards. Literally a Nissan Leaf could probably beat this thing to 30, and then any Tesla could beat it to 60. So it's not a very quick car by today's standards, but it does have a lot of character and a lot of soul.
Let me point out two things. Hand-built in England, which is pretty cool. Mm-hmm. And if you guys know your mid-engine sports car, the first thing that'll strike you is just how far back the engine is in the chassis. Most GTs, the engine, it would be more forward, but this is really almost a mid-engine, not a traditional mid-engine, but a mid-engine sports car.
So the transmission's in the back in a V8 Vantage, and then, look, this was kind of the sports car of the Aston lineup. And then the DB9 of this era was more of the Grand Tourer. And then the one that everybody wants is the V12, which is worth a lot of money. So those are still going to be double or triple the price of this car. But some of these early V8s are getting pretty cheap.
Yeah, and they're actually very reliable. So this is the first year for this Vantage, right? 2007?
I think 06.
06. Mm-hmm. But eventually what happened was all the Porsche people were like, hey, hold my beer, because we've got a lot more performance. And so Aston in the following years actually put more power into this.
Yeah, so they did 400 horsepower after this, and then the V12s. But like I said, those are big money. So these early cars are pretty good value, especially if you get one with the 6-speed automated manual. Those ones are really cheap. But they're a ton of fun. They're really, really good.
Yeah, and that automated manual is not a good
purchase.
Wasn't
as good, no.
Yeah, you want to get the traditional manual. And I got to tell you, Tommy, I think this is the best looking car that we own in our fleet.
So let's talk about the 911.
Yeah, this is my problem child. I bought this because I've always wanted a 911 from my youth. Of course, I grew up in the 80s, and this is an 87. It's called a G-body because it's got the right transmission. So I knew I wanted an 87 because they changed the transmission to 87 in the G-body, made it much more robust. And I had to compromise. And what I compromised on was something that I didn't want, which is the convertible. And this has been nothing but trouble ever since I bought it. So when we bought this car, we bought it, 5 years ago now, something like that, mm-hmm. for $35,000, which is actually relatively cheap. It does have the wide body kit, which is interesting. It does have the beautiful whale tail, which is also great. But it does have the convertible. And when I bought it, I was stupid enough not to even try the convertible. And when we brought it home, Tommy, what happened when we tried the electric convertible?
Well, it didn't do anything.
And that's because the two motors that actually make it convert were actually broken off the chassis.
Yeah, that's right. So basically, we had to get the mechanism rebuilt and re-welded to the inner body.
And that only cost $13,000.
Yeah, that was very expensive. and then we got everything synced up and we could close the top. And then that was working fine. And then you went ahead and put a new top on it.
Yeah,
the
interior was kind of crappy. So what I decided to do was redo the interior. When I was at the upholstery shop, they looked at the top and they said, you know, that's an original top. You want to redo it? And I thought to myself, yeah, let's redo the top as well. So we redid the top, which meant that it was much firmer because the material hadn't, of course, been on there since the car was new. And then what happened?
The weld broke again. So then the mechanisms had to be re-welded and then re-synced. And then that worked for like another 6 months. And then now the latch motors are acting up and they're failing. So we're in this top alone, like $20,000.
At least,
which is an insane situation.
And right now we've got it closed because if we open it, it'll come about up to here and then it'll stop and it won't latch and then you can't drive it at all. So what we have is a car that can either be a coupe like this or it could be a convertible, but it can't be both.
Yeah.
And that's after spending at least $20,000 on it. And the thing that people, I think, sometimes forget is that it is an old car, but you're still paying Porsche prices to keep it and maintain it.
Yeah. I mean, I think you've done some nice things, like we put the white Fuchs on it, which look really, really cool with these Michelin tires. So it's got the right look now. It had these horrible chrome things on it when we first bought it. It's got the little Porsche PCM radio in there. So it's got a little teeny tiny Apple CarPlay. And it's just it's a really cool looking car. It's pretty fun to drive as well. It's not a turbo. This is just a 3.2, 217 horsepower car.
So it's not very quick, but it starts up every time. It's got 100,000 miles on it. The next thing that's starting to go on, let me show you right here, is when we think this was a conversion to a wide body originally, but as you can tell right there, the paint is starting to crack. So I don't know if there's Bondo under there or if it's just paint's getting old, because this was not originally a blue car. If you look under the paint code in the front, I think it was gray to begin with, and then it was at some point resprayed. So mechanically, this car is rock solid, but cosmetically and convertible top-wise, it's not.
You can test.
Okay, you got a magnet?
So the flares are actually steel. That sticks. That's steel, and these are steel too, which is pretty unusual for conversion, but this... Oh, it's steel too. That's good news. Okay, so that's just a paint crack. That's good. So that's not actually Bondo. So good news there.
Good news there. But the other good news is that while I've put about between the new interior, between fixing the top, when I first bought it, it ran like a top. I took it to get smog, and as I pulled out of the smog area, it died. And then I started it up and started driving it home. It died again. And I took it to a Porsche shop around the corner from us. They said they fixed it for $2,500. I picked up the car, pulled it out of the garage, it died. And then I had to take it to another Porsche shop, and they figured out that there's a little computer back in the day under the seat that becomes unsoldered. Mm-hmm. So we had to have that replaced. But all in all, we're close to like $30,000 into this at this point.
So double that.
Well, 35 for the car plus 30 for all the repairs. So we're at like 65. But the good news is, because of COVID and because people have gone Porsche crazy, this car is probably worth what we're into it. So it's probably, a $60,000 car at this point. So that's good. But if we hadn't put that money into it, we'd be $30,000 richer.
So folks, that's the two cars we have here at the office. So let's go up to the ranch and check out the cars we have up there, and also some big ranch updates going on as well.
Yep. All right, let's head on up. Tommy, I love your license plate.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, my little goofy custom plate. I thought that was pretty funny.
That's pretty clever.
The problem with the black car is I live on a dirt road, and it's almost impossible to keep looking clean.
All right, well, one of the best things about this car is how it sounds. So why don't we drive it up to the ranch, and you can start it up and let him hear what it sounds like.
All right, sounds good.
That is super raspy. There is a hack that we learned about the exhaust. You want to tell them about that?
Yeah, so these cars have an active exhaust system with these baffles that open at like 4,000 RPM. And what you can do is pull a fuse. I think it's fuse 22, and then it leaves the baffles open all the time. So you get that kind of awesome exhaust note throughout the entire rev range. You don't have to wait till 4,000. And it really kind of makes this car more exciting to drive than it is. You don't need an aftermarket exhaust on these because they sound so good right from the factory.
Now, I love the interior on this car, Tommy. I love this, is it velour? What is Alcantara maybe up here on the roof?
Yeah, so you got like a suede headliner.
Yeah.
And there's a two-tone look, which is pretty cool.
It's beautiful, absolutely beautiful.
But this car's really nice to drive, so it's a nice balance between kind of taut and also sport, comfortable. So it kind of rides that line super well, where it's pretty good over the bumps, doesn't beat you up too much, you can take a nice long trip and not get uncomfortable, but then it's got really good steering and it's tight enough where you can have fun on a canyon road. It's not as sharp as I think like a 911 turbo, and it's not as exotic as an R8, but from this era, this car is also half the price of either of those. And it's a lot of car for $33,000.
The Leaf may be quicker, 0 to 30, but this one sounds a lot better.
Yeah.
And it's going to certainly impress people a lot more. Your mom, my wife, who's not very easily impressed by cars because she's seen everything come through our driveway over the last 15 years, thought this car was brand new.
Yeah, she did. She was very impressed. Yeah, the hardest part about it is I like to drive it, and it's very hard to keep clean because, of, like I said, I live on the dirt road, so I'm constantly squirting it down. But it's been a joy to drive it. Hopefully, like I said, I only put a couple thousand miles on it. Hopefully, in the long run, it ends up being pretty reliable because from what I've read, these cars are pretty robust.
You know, I also love this analog gauge cluster. Now that everything is digital, it's so nice to see something that is so precise and almost like watch-like in its design. It's just beautiful, Tommy.
Yeah, you've got that reverse flow tachometer as well. Yeah, and you've got like all of the buttons and switches and stuff here. Here, I'll try to... Sometimes... There it goes.
It's trying.
You gotta help it up a little bit. There it goes. Oh no.
No, it came back down. You know what? You're better to use it's trying again.
I do have to put the new gear in that because that is pretty sad looking. There it goes. That's the navigation.
Let's show them the reverse tachometer. That's from a race car, right?
Yeah, Asa's been doing that for years.
It's quick, dude.
It's brisk. It's brisk.
There we go.
There you go. There's my little, my deaky little navigation that doesn't work.
Oh, it doesn't really show
so
you where you're
at. So it's very 2006, so I like to, you usually can just go back, and then you can put it down. It should slide down.
So this little gear set you could buy to fix that, that's on your to-do list, huh?
Yeah, it's on the to-do list.
Oh, it just did shut down. Oh, there it goes. I'm sure when that was new, that was mighty impressive.
Oh, it was very impressive, yeah. So there's some parts, like, so that's out of a Volvo. The key is actually out of a Volvo as well. So there are aspects of this car that are part spin. But that means that when they break, they're actually pretty affordable to fix, which is nice.
If you guys were listening to this and watching it, basically we just spent 2 minutes trying to get the little pop-up
navigation screen to come up.
And it was just sad because it was trying, but... not successfully. The other thing I love about this is the analog clock. How cool is that, Tommy?
Yep. Yeah, I mean, everything in this car is super analog by modern standards, right? It's got analog buttons on the radio. It's got analog steering wheel buttons. It's got mechanical gauges. So it's held up pretty well. It doesn't seem to squeak or rattle after 48,000 miles. It's doing great. All right, let's cut to the ranch now, and we'll show some stuff up there.
You sure you don't want to show it accelerating one more time?
No, we're going to the construction zone.
Don't accelerate in the construction zone. I have to say, I'm jealous, Tommy.
Why?
Because you have put literally no money in. Well, no, that's not true. We did put some money into it.
Well, we tried to fix the squeaky brakes, which did not work. So yeah. They're still squeaky.
So I have had bad luck. There it goes. I have had bad luck with squeaky brakes. Not only does this car have squeaky brakes, as you can hear, but the new Corvette C8 that we have also has squeaky brakes. So it's been kind of my albatross.
Yep.
All right, let's cut to the ranch and show you what is in the rest of the TFL collection. There you go, Tommy. You're right. This car did get dirty going on the dirt road.
Yeah, it's just a never-ending fight with a black car. But luckily, it's got pretty good clearance, so we made it up.
So we're here at Tumbleweed Ranch, which is actually kind of our center of operations. And you've got a couple cars that we're actually reviewing this week. You want to kind of tell them what Andre is about to do with the... Chevy Silverado Trail Boss.
Yeah, so this is the Silverado EV Trail Boss. And Andre is working on a video here with, not this truck, but actually our gas F-150 we'll show you in a second. And he's comparing what Aero does for range with the gas truck. So Aging Wheels, a really cool YouTuber, did this really neat video talking about electric trucks and towing big blocky trailers. So we're gonna do the same test with a bunch of gas trucks and compare.
Yeah, we're gonna compare basically what gets you worse fuel economy. Is it the weight of the thing you're towing or is it the aero profile? So we've got two trailers with close to the same weight. One is very unaerodynamic, the other one will be much more aerodynamic. And then over here we've got the new Terrain AT4, and we're about to do a slip test on this after this video, right?
Yeah, so both this GMC and that Chevy are press loaners, so the way that we work here is companies will send us new cars and trucks for about a week or so to put through the ringer. And these are the two that are on test this week. So we've got this GMC and that Chevy Trail Bus. But then we also buy a bunch of cars that we kind of cycle through with the company to do videos on. So long-termers for new cars, buy a bunch of old cars for the Classics channel. And we're going to show you that now. But before we get into our barn...
You're going to show them the MDC trailer?
Yeah, so this is an MDC camper that we've had for a few weeks now. Andre... has taken this little guy camping. We've done the Ike Gauntlet with it, and a couple more videos coming soon. This is an off-road, they call it off-road extreme, but it's got advanced independent suspension, and it's supposedly built for some pretty rough and tumbled terrain. So that's what that's doing out here.
All right, let me go open the garage and we'll show them the fleet and what we have right now, because we have recently actually kind of cycled through the entire fleet. We've bought a lot of new trucks and some new cars. So I'll open up the garage and let's show them, Tommy.
So this barn, 40 by 70 feet, I think we built it 2 years ago now, and it has been really good. We kind of splurged on this one. We didn't realize it was going to be this nice. This is a Morton barn, and it was a cool process getting it built, because you work with the designer. You basically tell them your dimensions you want, doors you want, the colors, the siding, the roofing, and then they build it at a separate facility, ship it in, and then it goes up like that. The problem is that they're very high-end and expensive, so we probably went a little overkill. And then our man David went ahead and actually outfitted the inside here with these 4x8s here. We got really nice set of floors down here, so he did a really good job with getting this thing up and running. And then actually got married in here last year.
Yeah, you can see it. It's still there. Come on, show it.
That's right. It's still up there.
Well, the idea was we were going to use this as a studio, so we built it out as a studio. But in the end, we really didn't use it as a studio. We use it more or less for storing our vehicles. So let's start with the latest vehicle that we purchased, which is this Discovery 5.
Yep, so this is a Land Rover that we paid, I think, about $20,000 for. These are incredibly affordable on the used market. This was probably $70,000 just a few years ago, and they depreciate like rocks. This has got the TD6 turbo diesel engine in it, and we've had this one for a few months now to see how the longevity is, and it's been rock solid. It's actually been really good. Very comfortable to drive, very comfortable on the inside for road trips. It gets pretty good fuel economy. Now, we did actually have an issue with this. When we first bought it, it threw an emissions fault, which is very common. Basically, it said you have 250 miles to get to a service center, and luckily we were local because we were coming back from Utah, or we would have been really in trouble. But what happens is the DEF injectors in these can get all clogged up after sitting for too long.
Yeah, they like being on the highway. That's the one thing. These are not great cars for commuting back and forth. If you're doing highway driving with a diesel, this is a Ford diesel actually. It's the same. Basically the same diesel that was in the F-150 for a while.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so 3-liter V6 diesel. So only about 250-60 horsepower, but they make a lot of torque, so pretty torquey, and then this is the 8-speed automatic. Now, I still don't love the way that these Discovery 5s look with the roly-poly look, but I do like the color on this one.
It's a launch color, the hero color, Tommy.
Yeah, so this kind of orange is very, very cool to look at, and the car's been great, actually. So this thing's got, I think, 80,000 miles.
Yeah, I would call it copper.
Sure.
Yeah, and then we did do one thing to it, and that is we put on these off-road tires, which came off of our old Range Rover. So these are Falcons.
Yep.
And then the one thing that I am disappointed with is I went on the launch of this car initially, and they took us into some pretty rough off-road in Arizona. And so I thought this was a really good off-roader. We took it to Moab, and it kind of disappointed us, Tommy. It wouldn't even... Basically what happened was, well, you tell them what happened. You tried going up the wall.
Yeah, so it did really, really well. And then fins and things, it crushed, great clearance, lots of traction, good power. And then at the wall, it kind of went into like a self-safety mode, and it wouldn't give me any torque at the very top of the wall. So granted, that's like a 25-degree obstacle. You're facing toward the sky, but it kind of shut down all the fun. So these things are really good up into a point. I think up to level 6 out of 10 trails or 5 out of 10, they're excellent. And then if you try to go to 6, 6.5, things get shut down pretty quickly.
Well, it does have air suspension.
I do want to finish about that DEF injector problem, because
yep,
that was a reliability issue. The dealer cleaned that DEF injector for free, and it was under, they stood by their work, so we weren't charged for that.
Yeah, so when we bought it, it came from Denver Land Rover, and they give you a 6,000 mile warranty on the car.
Mm-hmm.
So it happened when we got it back to the office, it happened. Now, it does have air suspension, so you can raise it up pretty high, but if you show down here, apparently not high enough, because we did do some damage there in Moab, where we took a little bit of the paint off the front of it, and all in all, you know, it was one of my favorite cars when it first came out, but it's really more of a on-roader than an off-roader, and I think that's because now the Defender fills that niche in the Land Rover lineup. And this guy has kind of been there, but I don't think it ever had the kind of off-road qualities that a lot of Land Rovers have.
So the orange truck over here.
Speaking of off-roaders, now that's an off-roader.
So this is our newest acquisition in the truck space. So this is a GMC Canyon AT4X. Not a Bison, right? This does not have the AEV stuff. This is just a standard AT4X. I think we paid like $55,000, $56,000 for this truck. This thing's got the 2.7 four-cylinder in it. It's the latest generation, right? It's got the locking differentials, and this thing has been really good off-road. So Case and I just did a video coming up shortly on TFL Off-Road where we took this and our Bronco up Cliffhanger 2.0, and then this thing also made it up Red Cone. The 33s are the only limiting factor from a clearance standpoint with this truck, so you do get hung up on some more stuff than you might expect, but it has been a very cool truck, actually. I really like this a lot, and it's kind of interesting having this kind of essentially back-to-back with the Ranger Raptor. So which one do you like more, Dad? You like the GMC or the Ford more?
I'm going to say this, and I know it's kind of silly, but I'm going to be very superficial, and I like this better because of the color. I've absolutely fallen in love with the color. So the Raptor Ranger Raptor was a hell of a good deal for us because we bought it for $57,000, and then we put on 10,000 miles, and a year later we sold it for like $54,000. So we only lost $3,000, and then we took that $54,000 and put it into this truck. And I think you get more in the Ranger Raptor because instead of a four-cylinder, you get a six-cylinder. You probably get...
Didn't we put that into the Bronco?
No, I think it went into this guy.
Oh, did it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Anyways, I think that you get... The Ranger Raptor beats this in a lot of ways. The engine is better in the Ranger Raptor.
Twin-turbo V6. Yeah.
Way more powerful. This engine's a little bit coarse. But I think that this truck beats the Ranger Raptor in terms of interior quality, but also colors and buttons. So the interior in the Ranger is all in the screen, all of the features. Including
the lockers, which I don't love.
Yeah, so this thing's actually got some real physical buttons and controls, which is great. So the interior is nicer. You also get kind of that cool white back on the seats and those red seat belts. So it just really pops. The red and the orange clash pretty brutally. So that's the only thing I don't like about this interior.
Yeah, I grew up in the 80s. That's not clashing.
That's an opportunity for greatness.
That is 80s colors.
So the interior is much nicer on the GMC than the Ford. I think from a capability standpoint, they are right there. I mean, they both have similar sized tires. I love that GMC gives you these wraparound sliders that protect the side of the truck a little bit. The lockers on this truck work great. It's very unfussy off-road. It just lets you do pretty much whatever you want. I think they're right neck and neck. The one thing that Ford definitely does better, these DSSVs are pretty rough riding. So I think that the...
You want to show them? You can see them in the back there. Those are. I think the Ford has Fox, right?
Yep.
One nice thing, so Andre just had to have his Fox shocks on his TRD
Pro
Tundra actually rebuilt because they don't last the life of the truck. These are supposed to last the life of the truck.
Uh-huh.
That's
what they said. Oh, yeah, okay.
I'm just saying.
I don't know if these are even... So this shock, I talked to a shock engineer about this from a third party, and he said that these are unbelievably expensive and complicated shocks, and he was shocked that the GMC would put this on a stock truck in the first place because they're so sophisticated. But he also said there's a lot of little bits in them. Well, but it's not the shock that's the problem. It's the spring rate is just too firm on these Canyons. So I think the Ranger's a little bit more comfy, especially on dirt roads. But off-road, this thing does incredibly well. It's very, very capable.
So you took it off-road yesterday. Did you see what you did to it?
What did we do to it?
Let me show you.
I don't even know what we did to it.
Look what you did to the wheel by the stem there.
No, that was from Red Cone.
Oh, was that from Red Cone?
Yep, okay. That's been there.
All right, yep. That was there already.
Yep. So I think that...
Which one do you think is better off-road, the Raptor or this guy?
Oh, they're neck and neck.
Yeah, they're very similar.
The Raptor's better at high speed. Yeah. I like some of the aspects of this for rock crawling more than the Ford. But, yeah, it's been really good. I actually like it quite a bit. I wasn't expecting myself to like it as much as I do.
I had two problems with the Ford. Number one, the seats kind of bent backwards in a weird way, and so they hit me right back here.
Mm-hmm.
And that just, I could never get comfortable in it. See, you just did that. That's what I would do the whole time when I was driving it. And two, I love, we had, I think it was called, it was like a pepper color.
It was like a red.
Jalapeno. What's a red pepper?
I don't remember the name of it.
But I do like this Desert Sun color, and like I said,
it's not for me.
I'm very superficial.
But it's very bold.
I love the look of this thing. You can spot it from space, and that makes me happy.
Oh, okay. This is an interesting thing that we see. Someone needs to drop me a comment about this, because it's something we see a ton on these GM trucks. When you air them down, the headlights do some bizarre things. Have you noticed this?
No, what do they do?
The turn signals will randomly flash.
Well, it's supposed to tell you when you're down to your, isn't that supposed to tell you when you're down to your air down weight there?
Well, I thought so, but then it just does it randomly. They just sometimes randomly the daytime running light goes off.
I think it's supposed to be a signal when you're
here.
Down to your.
This is going to be pretty crummy, but look, you can see in this video. So look, like the we're airing up here. One of the daytime running lights just turns off.
Yeah, that you've.
But then it comes back on, and then the other one turns off. So if someone knows the connection between airing down and daytime running lights on these GM trucks, please let me know because it's driving me crazy. I guess I could read the manual too. That'd be a good thing to do.
here's our 2014 Tesla Model S. We bought this vehicle for $13,800, I think, a few months ago because I got the key, Tommy. Because I wanted to see, or we wanted to see if a.
It was less than that, wasn't it? Like 13?
No, it was 13.8,
was
I think.
Was it 13? Okay.
Yeah, I wanted to see if an electric car with over 100,000 miles still has a sufficient battery and range.
Yeah.
And we found that, we took this the Tesla and we found that it's only lost over the last, 11 years, 10% of the battery. So it still has 90% of the battery, so it still gets over 200 miles. The interesting thing about this is, it was kind of a sad story. I bought it from a gentleman who was selling it for a friend of his who passed away, and he wanted to give the money to his wife, and he knew nothing about the car. So I bought it kind of with no prior knowledge. And it turned out to be a very pleasant surprise because the first time I went to supercharge it, I went to see how much money I had spent. And it turns out I had spent zero, Tommy. You know why?
Yeah, because free supercharging.
It has free supercharging for life. And that was a pleasant surprise.
So the thing about these cars is I think everybody at the office hates it, except for my dad and I, because it is pretty clunky and it is pretty rattly. I'm not sure that the build quality of some of these early Model S's was quite up to par, and I'll give you an example. When you close this door, it sounds a little bit like a car crash. So you can really hear how everything kind of moves around. But what I love about this
car. Do it again. I'll put the mic on because you'll hear it on the inside.
You heard it on the outside
too. Did you? Okay.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Listen. It sounds not too good.
Sounds like the window's about to pop out.
But here's the thing about this car: for $13,000, the tech in this thing is still better than most brand new cars. So you've got this great screen that's incredibly easy to use. And even though it's over 10 years old now, Tesla still pushes updates to make it even better, which is great. But it's such a simple, basic screen to use. You got the driver instrument cluster, which also tells you everything you need to know. And I think that it's a really impressive performer considering how affordable this car is. So this is just an 85, right? It's a base model Tesla. Close, actually a 60 would have been a base model.
Yeah, it's not base, it's like the middle model.
It's realistically the slowest quote unquote Tesla of this era. 0 to 60 is like 5 seconds. And even still, it's faster than 98% of the cars on the road. It does about 230 miles on a charge. It's got a great audio system. It holds a ton of stuff. It's got a massive front trunk. You wanna pop the front trunk? The easiest way to do it is in the screen.
Okay, it's not popping.
That key's a little hokey here.
Yeah, the keys doesn't exactly work.
So if I go to here and then I go to controls, so absolutely massive front trunk, partly because this is a rear drive version, it doesn't have the motor in the back, but look how huge that is. And it's just been awesome. So we are having a couple of reliability issues. Do you want to talk about the seat?
Yeah, that's been my biggest issue. So the seat, and this is a common problem, I guess, on these older Model S's. 2013 was the first year, this is the second year, and that is the seat does not stay where you put it. It kind of moves on the little rail, and every time it moves, because it's set to my body, right? I've got it set to, for me, every time the rail moves, the seat tries to compensate, and so you're driving along, and the seat's just going back and forth, and it's very unpleasant,
actually. So you'll be sitting here, and then it'll just do that. It'll actually like electrically move a little bit forward and back. Only at random, it's very annoying. So that's been a problem. It does have some suspension clunks,
yeah,
so
the suspension
it needs control arms, I think, ultimately. But look, for what we use it for, which is errands and then airport car, it's a perfect airport car with 240 miles of range. It's been awesome. It also charges pretty quickly just on level 2. And then when we're not using it for a period of a week, we even plug it in just on level 1 to keep the battery at 80%. And it's perfect. It's a great, great car. I really like it a lot.
Well, the one thing that Tesla did do, which is kind of slimy, is it's got limited, unlimited charging for life, but when you take it to a supercharger, they've actually derated how fast it charges using the software. So I think when this was new, it would charge like 100 or close to 100 kilowatts.
Like 150.
150. Now it does like, 70 or 80, and it quickly falls off to like 30.
Yeah, the thing, so Tesla will tell you that's to prolong the battery.
Right, sure it is.
But it also is a big encouragement to stop costing the money at supercharging, because then you're going to be sitting there for an hour. So that's a problem.
So this is our BMW i8 that I bought in Anchorage and drove down. Me and Cole, who's behind the camera, that was quite the adventure. You should go check that out. Except now we have a problem, and that is we have a critter living in it.
So if you look at the front tire, you're going to notice these little pellets, and that is my attempt to get whatever critter is living in the front trunk out of the front area of this vehicle. It doesn't have a front trunk. Underneath the hood, I mean. Out of what's underneath the hood. So we started seeing these little poopies around the barn, and then you were in here, and you actually saw
something like jump into it from
like
underneath.
Like a little mouse marmot thing.
I don't know what it is. It's either a fat rat or an obese mouse. I don't know, but it just jumped right into it. So luckily we did put down some poison. It has started munching on it, but I'm just worried that it's gonna start munching on the wires, which these little rodents like to do, in which case, if this thing munches through the wiring harness, it's going to be a $20,000 repair.
Yeah, the car will be basically totaled.
Yeah, the little guy can total it. So I'm a little terrified right
thankfully,
now.
Thankfully, I've done a lot of looking, and there's been no munched wires, and everything works, and there's no warning lights.
Yeah, you figure you get some kind of warning lights.
We're working really hard to get him out of there, which is why we got poisons all around it and some traps and stuff. So this car is awesome. I've just did a video fairly recently, a one-year update on this i8. You can pick them up now for between 40 and 50,000.
This
like
is a
did.
2014 or yeah. 2015, sorry.
15, yep.
Second year.
And the battery is still in perfect health. So 10-year-old battery, and it's exactly working like it's supposed to. These are really fast, even though people say they're slow. When you get them in launch control and sport mode, this car will out-accelerate our C8 Corvette. Pretty impressive. Granted, we're at elevation. Turbocharged engine's been super reliable. Excellent car to own. Been super stoked with this. Just had it into the BMW dealer for a yearly checkup, and there's nothing to report.
Yeah, they built like 20,000 of them, so I figure it's going to be a future classic. And when I bought it, me and Cole would stop at a gas station, and people would actually come and look at it. It's got the gull-wing doors, of course, but it looks new. This was kind of like BMW's moonshot. So all this, of course, is plastic. It's got a carbon composite tub. It's got about 20 miles of all electric range. And it's actually very quick. People think that these wrote a check that you couldn't cash because it's got a 3-cylinder mini engine. But combined with the 2 transmissions, the 2 electric motors, it'll do 0-60 in like 4 seconds, which is pretty impressive.
And it still does it today, even at elevation. Yep.
Yep. All right. This is our newest purchase. We bought this because of, why don't you pop the hood and we'll show them why we bought this guy.
Yep, so this is a 5-liter Coyote-powered V8 Tremor. We've done a bunch of videos on this truck already. Pop it open.
And we opened so many vehicles. And the beauty, of course, is that this is the old V8. And in some ways, this is more thirsty and less powerful than the 3.5 twin-turbo EcoBoost.
For sure.
But it does have that great V8 sound, and it does have the option to be supercharged, because Ford, for about $11,000, will supercharge this with a Whipple supercharger, giving you I think it's almost 800 horsepower, and warranty it. So that's something that we do want to do at some point. We just need it right now for regular testing before we go and, upgrade it.
So I think we paid $62,000 for this truck. We bought it when Ford was doing their employee pricing.
Yeah, it was $8,000 off.
Yeah, and it's the perfect spec. So it's got a lot of nice features that you probably want on your truck. So it's got a heated seat, right?
Well, it's the Tremor.
It's got the off-road stuff, but it's not so crazy expensive where you're really sweating thinking I should have bought a Raptor. If you want to check out the inside here, Cole, it's got these kind of cool urban camo style seats. So as Tremors goes, it's pretty basic. It doesn't have ventilated seats. It doesn't have Blue Cruise. It doesn't have the full-time all-wheel drive or four-wheel drive system. There's like one package on Tremors you get. There's like a low and a high. I think it's like 401 high. This is the low version. The full-time four-wheel drive would be nice. And it does have one feature back here, which just drives me up the wall. So pretty useful truck. I've been using it for driving movies, and that's great. Except the tailgate makes me want to pull my hair out, because this is the electric tailgate. And it works like 8% of the time. You go to lift it up, and sometimes it finishes, and sometimes it just backs down and then beeps at you. It's just a not well thought out system.
The thing that drove me crazy is we had to actually have it Linuxed because Ford doesn't do, or they do from the factory, but the dealer doesn't do it. And so I can't see having a truck that isn't bedlined because it would destroy the paint.
The bedliner is pretty standard. The thing which is insane is it didn't have wheel liners. Yeah. So we had our local Linux put wheel liners. That's like $62,000. You can't put wheel liners in a truck. That's just crazy. But yeah, it's been awesome. It's been a really, I think the best part about this truck for me is the ride and the sound. So the V8's pretty muted, but you still get a little bit of intake and just a tiny bit of exhaust out the back.
And I don't think we missed out on anything by getting the low version of the Tremor.
Well, full-time four-wheel drive.
And a Torsen front end.
Yeah, you get the limited slip, yeah.
So basically you've got three-wheel drive.
But the thing about this truck is it's like, it's not something that I would be regularly trying to take out on a trail just because it's so big. So the nice thing about the Tremor pack is if you wanted to go camping, this will get you to the cool camp spots. But I'm not eager to take this thing through Hell's Revenge, just because it is a sizable unit. And I know it will do it, but it doesn't really feel happy doing it. Now, coming over here, we've got GG, our General Giant truck. So this was a military truck that you and Andre picked up in Utah.
Yeah, boys.
Taking up a tremendous amount of room in the barn here.
But luckily, we built the barn with a tall ceiling and tall doors, just because we knew we would be getting some big trucks. And this is probably this is like the Harley of trucks, Tommy. It doesn't actually do anything. It's a Bob Deuce and a half. So this started out as a 6x6. Now, of course, it's been Bob, which makes it much more usable. So it's actually not that much bigger when you look at it compared to a full-size truck. It's a lot taller, but it's not much wider, especially when you compare it to like the 2500 over there. So you can actually use it as a daily driver if you wanna, you know, wear earmuffs because it is so loud because that exhaust comes out right next to the passenger's ear. But for $39,000, it's one hell of a truck, completely rebuilt. Everything has been redone, making it much more user-friendly. It's just, like I said, it's just like the Harley of trucks. It's not something you're going to use to tow. It's not something you're probably going to use to haul a lot of things, but it is something you're going to take out and have a lot of fun with because you're going to be the coolest kid in town when you're driving this truck around.
So we just did an update video at TFL Truck if you want to check that out. Yeah, I mean, it's a good thing to take to the grocery store. It's kind of how I use it. But it does have very limited use case beyond just putting around town. I would like to try to take it on some off-road trails, but just getting it to the off-road trails is a little bit of a chore because it really only does about 53 miles an hour is kind of where it's happiest. But definitely a cool thing to kind of look at and putt around town in.
Yeah, yeah. And it is surprisingly usable. It's automatic, so once you get it going, it's like, it's not much different than driving, you know, a regular pickup. Except for the fact that it's, you know, you have to crawl up into it, it's super loud, you're sitting 15 feet in the air, which is fine.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and then over here, what do we got over here, Tommy? This is our Range Rover.
Perry!
Second Range Rover, Perry. By the way, the pink truck is Pumpkin.
Yeah, my dad's big on branding, but no one calls it Pumpkin.
I call it Pumpkin.
I think Mac is a better name because it looks like mac and cheese. Ugh. But he's big on Pumpkin. Anyway, this is Perry. Perry is our Range Rover,
P38.
Yep, yeah. This is a 2001 Range Rover. A lot of people say this is the most unreliable car of all time. Perry's actually been very, very reliable, though. So I just took him on a big-ass road trip. So we took him to Utah, and then we did our shoot in Utah. And then I had to drive it to Gateway, Colorado, through like the middle of nowhere, through really remote mountain passes. And it did great. It was 105, and there's no AC, which is pretty toasty. And then I had to drive back to the office here down I-70, which was another few hundred miles, also at 104.
Those who know say that the P38 is the worst and least reliable of the Range Rovers.
They are correct.
But
I will say, the thing about Range Rovers is they get to this state. So this is kind of the happy place for a Range Rover, where most stuff is broken, but it will still get you home. This is the weird thing about this. So in this car, I'll give you an example. Pretty much all the climate controls kaput at this point.
Yeah.
So like none of the blend doors work, which is kind of annoying and problematic, right? It doesn't have air suspension anymore. That took a dump a long time ago, so it's been coil converted. The clock doesn't work. So the screen here is convinced that it's about to die. It says suspension fault. But the reality is that once they get to this perfect state of worn out, they just seem to go forever. So this 4.6 liter V8 is supposed to have died 9 times by now. They're known for overheating, they're known for head gasket failures, but it just keeps trucking, and the transmission's great, and the low range is great, and the brakes are fine. So it's these things are funny. Like, they'll surprise you what brakes, and then they'll surprise you what doesn't break.
Well, here's the thing, Tommy. People confuse or conflate reliability with not having to do maintenance. So when somebody says like a Toyota Tacoma or a 4Runner is very reliable, what they're saying is, you know, I buy it and then I don't have to put any more money into it. I can just drive it around forever and it'll be fine. And that's not true. The truth is, and we've owned so many old cars that we know, as long as you do the required maintenance, as long as you do what has to be done, in other words, take care of it, then the vehicle will be fine. And you can, of course, probably take a Toyota farther without doing the required maintenance, but at the end of the day, all these mechanical things are going to break. And if you have one where somebody loved it and took care of it and did the required maintenance, it's going to be reliable. Just because it's a Land Rover P38 doesn't mean that it can't go, how many, 150,000 miles? It just means you got to do the maintenance.
Yeah, but you're going to do a lot of maintenance to get it to
150. Yeah, yes, you are.
So,
but you still have to do
there's
it.
There's an argument to be made if you're maintaining it constantly and fixing it constantly. That's an unreliable
machine.
Well,
I'm saying fixing it. I'm saying do the required maintenance. Like you're changing the oil on a regular basis. You're replacing the things that need to be replaced.
Yeah.
You're changing belts. And people conflate that with having a Toyota where they don't have to do that. Well, the car will be fine. It's a Toyota. I don't have to change the, you know, any of the belts. Okay. I don't have to change the oil.
But like these have head gaskets that fail.
Sure.
Is that maintenance or is that repair?
Well, if it's like, okay, like that Discovery, right?
Yeah.
That's a perfect example of something. So that diesel engine needs a new drive belt.
Uh-huh.
Land Rover says at 80,000 miles, except that is a $4,000 service. Uh-huh. And so most people won't do that because it's a lot of money to replace that drive belt. But if that drive belt goes, the whole engine is just going to go, right? Because it's an interference engine.
Sure.
And yet, because of the cost of that service, most people won't do it. We haven't done it. We should do it. We haven't done it. And that's what I'm saying. If it's reliable as long as you do the required $4,000 service at 80,000 miles. Whereas a Toyota may not have that, you know, expensive of a service at 80,000 miles.
So you just have to maintenance them a lot. I think that
you
the
just
argument,
have to do the required, and the required maintenance is expensive. It's but
and kind of silly. Why does a diesel engine have a oil pump belt? That's pretty ridiculous.
I know, but that's what it is. I mean, it's Land Rover maintenance costs.
Well, the good news is we've done no maintenance of this at all.
No, because we haven't done that many miles with it. As long as they sit here, they don't need maintenance for the most part. And even though cars do, you know, also get old while they're sleeping, just like we do. So this is our brand new purchase. We just bought this. It's the Royal Enfield Himalayan. We bought it for the motorcycle channel. It's a very affordable dual sport. I would have called it enduro bicycle motorcycle. So it costs about $5,000. And it's probably one of the more bargain basement 450s you can buy. And Royal Enfield has come a long way. They kind of started out building old British bikes, but now an Indian company, of course. Now, of course, they're very much up to date. We've got, what are the shock absorbers on this? We got Showa shocks, which is anything that a Japanese bike will have. We've got a full TFT here. We have, you know, a very modern thumper, and it's just a hell of a bike for not a lot of money.
You want to go to the truck?
Yeah, let's go to the truck.
So these wheels, these are a cool story. These are the original wheels off my Mercedes that just showed up 2 years later.
Which Mercedes
is
that,
Tommy? Which is cool. I have a blue, light blue 72 Mercedes, which we'll check out in a second. And these just came in, and I'm going to put the hubcaps on them and clean them up a little bit. And I think that should look
really
cool.
Well, when you say they came in, the guy who bought them from...
Yeah, so he kept them in Washington.
Yeah.
And then...
Washington State.
Yeah, he was clearing a storage unit and then called us up and said, you guys want them? And shipped them in, which was really nice of him, and paid him a couple $100, and now I've got the original wheels for the car, which I think is super, super cool, and these paint-matched hubcaps are hard to find. So next to the pile of wheels is our Chevrolet Silverado 2500 Trail Boss. This has kind of been the workhorse of the company lately. It's done a ton of towing. I mean, anytime you see like an old car thing or a trailer involved in a shoot, even if this isn't in the shoot, it's probably somehow involved towing a trailer or a car or whatever to the shoot. And it has been very, very good. This has been one of probably the best purchases we've made recently because it's got great power, it's got a good interior, it's got decent tires on it so you can tackle some snow and light off-roading. And it's just been a fantastic vehicle. So this replaced our Ram 2500 Cummins,
which we kept for 3 years. So we keep these for a while. Now, the cool thing is Chevy was kind enough to send us the steps, which is pretty cool. So I was taking, me and you were taking your grandfather to California, and he's relatively frail. He's 93. And so those steps came in very handy. So
yep,
thank you,
GM.
And then we've got this really cool, almost Tesla-like tonneau cover, right?
So this is the real truck electric tonneau cover.
Here, you want to show them what it does?
Yeah, so you just push the button.
Yeah.
And then it glides open electrically. Now, I was very skeptical of this, whether or not this was going to last at all. And it's actually been holding up really well. So it hasn't failed on us. It hasn't, you know, left us without a bed. The only complaint I have with this is it does take up a little bit, well, quite a bit of bed space right at the edge here. But you just push one button, it closes up. It's very easy to use, and it's been maintenance-free so far.
Yeah, and it makes, you know, your bed relatively weatherproof. So let's say you're going to the airport to pick up some friends, and they have luggage, and you have no place to store it. Well, now you do.
When did we buy this truck? December of last year?
Yeah, how many miles are on it now?
12,000.
We've already put on 12. That's how useful this truck has been.
Yeah. So it's been... Most of these vehicles don't get driven that much because we've got a lot of things we need to drive around a lot. But 12,000 miles already, and it's holding up beautifully.
Yeah, we got this, you know, we looked at the Ford as well. Mm-hmm. We couldn't look at the Ram because we just sold the Ram. And the reason we went with the Chevy was because I like the interior, except for the seats.
The seats are still pretty flat.
Yeah, Ford builds better seats. Yeah. But, I mean, this is pretty much a... interior you would find in any high-end GM car, which is a good thing.
Yeah, and like I think that this drives more car-like than the Chevy, than the Ram, with independent front suspension. It's a little bit softer. It doesn't sound as cool with the Duramax. The Cummins had kind of a better growl to
it. Yeah, we'll pop it up. We'll show it to them. We've already done our first service. We had to change the oil, of course. You have to change the oil more often.
It's probably going to need another one here soon.
Yeah, and more. It's more important on a diesel.
But it's been great. It's been super, super reliable, super, super powerful. These things haul ass.
Much less truck-like than the Cummins. If you like trucky trucks, then go for your Cummins. If you like more car-y trucks, then I would go for this. I think the exhaust brake worked a little bit better on the Cummins, Tommy. But in general, you know, we're not actually towing that heavy, right? So this could probably tow, I think, 18,000 pounds, and very rarely do we tow that much.
Mm-hmm. But truck's been great, super, super good.
And it does have a functional air scoop, which is cool.
Yeah, it's got your hood scoop.
Yeah.
There you go. So all next right. up, we've got the Bronco. So Everglades Ford Bronco, right? Bought this a few months back to do a bunch of videos with. Everglades is discontinued now, which is a bummer, because this is the best spec of Bronco, because it gives you the off-road stuff, locking differentials, snorkel. It gives you a winch, but then you get vinyl seats, you get a fairly basic interior, and you can get in under $55,000, $56,000 now, especially with some of the discounts. So this thing has been really cool. It's probably my favorite new vehicle in the fleet right now, just because of the capability. It's very comfortable. It's got that built-in winch in the front, which has proven itself useful a couple times already. We've needed it and used it. Yeah, it's been huge. It's been just freaking awesome.
Anytime you can get 35s from the factory, that's a winner.
Yeah, front locker, rear locker. I wish this had the sway bar disconnect.
That's the thing that's missing. I do like the snorkel. I mean, so you know, Ford's making you choose. Do you want a snorkel? Do you want a winch? Or do you want a front bar disconnect? I think that they could have put everything in there for $55,000. Because this basically is the same amount of money as that GMC.
And then here we've got... That also doesn't have a sway bar disconnect.
I know.
And this has a winch. It's got the integrated roof bars, which looks cool, but it really means that you can't take the tops off very easily.
But that one's orange. This is eruption green.
Eruption green is better than your orange. It's got everything you need, though, to hit the trails, rails.
I was going to ask you, Tommy, for 55, which would you rather have, the GMC or...
Oh, the Bronco.
And you would say the Bronco. Yeah. I would say the GMC.
One big complaint I have with this, though. So 2,000 miles on this, so you just crossed over 2,000. Look how unbelievably badly these tires are wearing. So this is the stock tire. It's a Goodyear Territory MT, I believe. And sure, we do off-road it quite a bit, but huge chunks missing out of the blocks on the side of this tire. So this is pretty unacceptable for how few miles it has.
Yeah, I'm not sure I love these tires. We had them. This is our second Bronco. We had them on the first edition. I didn't love them on there. I don't think I love them on here. They pick up a lot of rocks because of that very tight pattern.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure this is the tire that I would go with, but they seem to work well.
Yep. I'm actually not that impressed off road with them either.
How do you like the interior? It's pretty basic.
It's locked.
Oh, is it locked?
Yeah.
Oh.
We talked about it. It's great. It does everything it needs to do. Yeah.
Right. Well, shall we move on and go to the carriage house?
Yep. Let's go to the carriage house.
Case just arrived. I think they're about to take out the Ford.
case in his little Fiat.
Which is the same Fiat you have. You're welcome to get everything you want, Andre.
It's all you, Andre.
It's all you. Yeah.
Case, how's your little Fiat been? One thumb up, you see that?
Here, Tom, you gotta...
Yeah, just the one. Just the one thumb up.
So we have three of these Fiats among the people
of TFL. Yeah, between all of us here at the
because
company.
Because basically you could lease them for nothing.
I like to claim that I found the deal, right?
He did.
You want to show
Although
them
what's... Tommy found
is,
a better
is what
deal.
I think in the trunk still?
Oh, no, the transmission has dropped off. So I had a transmission in the trunk
yesterday.
You had
a transmission in the back. It's the only Fiat. What happened here, dude?
Oh, I don't know. That it might be built like that.
Yeah, that's standard.
Yeah, that comes from the factory. I would say one thumbs up because I am over 27 months paying about $2,000 to have this car, which is a little bit more than a smartphone costs these days. So you can't complain that much. But it has some quirks. I'm sure you've noticed with yours. Sometimes you plug it in, you walk away from it, it charges for about 10 minutes, and then just decides to stop.
And then mine just stopped charging it altogether on one charger we used. I mean, I don't think it's a very high quality item.
No, but it's genuinely a pretty fun car to drive, and yeah. It is so cheap to lease, especially here in Colorado.
And actually, the range in the summer has been awesome. So like on ours, we get like 150, 160 miles. And seriously, they're so unbelievably almost free. Where like it's just who cares if it has its problems? It's a $20 a month car, something $40 a month.
Well, yours
car.
Is $9 a month, isn't it, Tommy?
Well, mine's $0 a month.
Oh, yours is nothing a month. Yeah.
Mine is $49 a month. So,
which is still nothing.
Yeah, it's less for me to have this car than I would spend on gas in my other vehicles.
100%. All right, thanks, Case.
Thanks, Case.
All right, good luck, guys.
Let's keep going.
Do you want to show them your new little trailer you're excited about?
Yeah, I'll show them my trailer. So we've got a Luma trailer over here.
The world's worst trailer.
And this,
not the Aluma. The Aluma's been great.
We have this Aluma trailer, which we got from Aluma.
Yep. So this has been cool. This has actually gotten a lot of use. It's a flat deck trailer, and what's cool about this, it has these really low profile wheel arches here, so you can drive wider vehicles just on top of them. Yeah. So this has been a good workhorse around the office. Then we've got our big Tex, which has been putting in so many miles. We're now on our third set of tires on this big Tex.
Yeah, Luma lent us that one. We bought this one.
Yeah, boy, we need to do a video about the quality they put in these tires now.
Oh, they're horrible.
Because these trailer tires have lasted like 10, 15,000 miles a pop. They've been really, really bad.
And then one of my friends, unfortunately, recently passed away. And his wife called me and she said, "Do you want your trailer back?" So I had lent him my little motorcycle trailer like 15, 20 years ago. I went and got it back. So I've got my little motorcycle trailer back and we're slowly starting to put it back together. We just put the new wooden boards on it and Gavin did a great job in staining them, but we need to put lights on it, which we have. I got it. Here's the crazy part. This trailer cost me, it's one of these trailers you get on line, right?
No, this was a Harbor Freight trailer.
It's a Harbor Freight, so it costs like $150. In Colorado, when you go to re-register it...
This was like 20 years ago you bought this thing.
They charge you all the years that you haven't registered it.
Oh, no!
So to register this trailer, it was $160.
Oh,
more than the trailer is worth. And I had no clue. Had I known that, I probably would have just taken it to the dump.
Yeah, this trailer is pretty garbage, but I've got some sentimental attachment because you bought this when I was like 6 years old. So it's
well, it folds up, which is cool, into three parts.
So allegedly.
You can store it. No, it was folded up at their house.
Was it?
Yeah. They had it folded up next to the garage.
This is the worst piece of engineering I think I've ever seen, this trailer.
I
can't believe
fine.
It's like it just won't go away. This haunted me when I was a kid. It would always fall down, and it was so badly made. Remember we got a flat tire on it?
Well, we have it now, and it's registered, and we're going to start using it.
It's a haunted trailer.
For something.
$200 Harbor Freight trailer. So a couple cars out here. My Land Rover, 20,000 miles in, and it has been genuinely perfect. No issues at all. So I've got an update, fleet update over at TFL Car if you want to check out all the deets on this. It's been just perfect.
Or go to alltfl.com.
Yep, that's another good option. My Fiat's out because my wife is taking it to work today. And then, another car that's not here is the Viper. And the Viper isn't here because it's back at the radio shop. You actually did a cool thing, Dad. You put the original radio in it.
I did, yeah. It came with the car and it had one of those crazy, like, 10-year-old radios that lights up, you know, and has a little remote control, which nobody can figure out. But it had the original radio. So to me, these cars are time capsules, so I'd rather have the original. So I put the original radio in, and when I did it, I found out that the speakers were blown, so now they're replacing the speakers.
Mm-hmm. So that car, and then you also tracked down the original wheels.
Those are coming tomorrow.
Yep.
The three spokes.
The three spokes, and you found them new in box. So we got wheels. Now we just need tires, and we're trying to work with Michelin on that because tires are like $2,000.
So Michelin, if you want to sponsor a great Viper series, which is being proven to be very popular, hit us up.
Okay, so this car we're looking at now is our 1968 Chevrolet Corvette. So
first year of the C3.
We bought this for, I think, $21,000.
$22,000.
Maybe overpaid a little bit for this car?
I don't think so, Tommy. So C3s are the unwanted stepchild of the Corvette range.
Well, C4s are.
Well, I think C3s are.
An early C3 is a really desirable car.
And the reason for that is because this is the malaise era. Basically, the fuel crisis hit in the 70s, and these cars got choked with emissions. But the cars that are very valuable are the ones that have the chrome bumpers, not the plastic bumpers. And so anything up to about 73 from 68 is going to carry a premium. And so this is an absolute bean can. It's completely stock. And in fact, it's got one and only one option, which is what, Tommy?
I think it's got an FM radio.
No, it's got the soft top. So it's a convertible.
Oh. No, but I mean, seriously, apart from options. So these could be had with air conditioning, power steering.
Four speed. Automatic.
Power windows.
Yep.
This has none of that. So
we don't even have a four-speed manual. We got a three-speed manual.
So that's the only thing I don't like about this car is the transmission kind of sucks.
Well, but it's a three-speed.
The rest of the car is awesome. I really like driving this a lot. This is the base engine. This is a 327, so it's 300 horsepower, or they said from the factory. Mechanically, this car is actually really good.
Yeah, the guy who sat for a long time. It was a barn find. It sat from 92. It was repainted, unfortunately. Well, the original color was that kind of copper.
The problem is, this car looks like it was painted with a toothbrush.
Yeah, it was horribly painted.
This is why I think maybe we overpaid a little for this car. But the engine's pretty strong. It does burn a little bit of oil.
You're not going to find good original paint from 68.
Yeah, but
that's
you could
hard.
Find a paint job that's not done with...
Yeah, but it's not the paint that's valuable. It's the fact that it's a 68. That's what
sure,
makes it valuable.
Sure, yeah, there's going to be some value in that.
A lot of, what do you mean some value? A 68 compared to a 78, there's like 100% premium
on
this. Yeah,
68s are more valuable for sure, yeah. Now, the really desirable versions of this have the high-performance 350s.
I'm a little offended because I spent a lot of time looking at a lot of
cars. I love the car. No, I think it's a great car.
You're conflating. I like that word, by the way. You're confusing the difference between an early Corvette to a later Corvette. So, listen. Yes, C3s, you can get those all day long for 10 or less if it's the malaise era. But these early ones, ones with the chrome bumpers, carry a magnificent premium because these are the ones that people want.
It's an awesome car.
Right, no emissions.
I just think that for the quality of the bodywork on this.
But the thing was, this was crap from begin with.
Yeah,
this was a crappy car. There's a story apparently.
It wasn't painted from a bucket when it was new.
In 68, Chevy loaned this car, and you can tell the 68 because the door handles are different from the other ones, and so are the wipers. Chevy loaned this car to Car and Driver. They had it a week, and they gave it back to Chevy, and they said, bring it back when it's finished. That's how badly these things were originally built from the first year. So the 68 is not the example of a C3.
I'm not complaining about the quality of the fit and finish.
It's horrible.
I'm complaining about the quality of the paint on this one.
Sure, but you could easily spend $20,000 on the paint alone if you want to do it right.
Sure.
Or 10.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, obviously somebody spent like $2,000 on this.
But. Yeah, it would be expensive to get it perfect. Yeah. But it's a nice driver. It's really fun to drive. And the cool stuff works. So like the headlights work on this, the wipers work on this.
And I can't drive it because the steering wheel is too big and it goes into my lap and I can't actually.
This is a small steering wheel.
I know. I know.
The original one was like 50% bigger.
I know, and I can't. It's still too. Yeah. I know.
So he never gets to drive it. I do drive it a lot though. I think it's great. It probably will start right up actually.
You have a key?
Yeah, I've got it here.
I bet you'll start right up too. So to me, that's more important than the paint, Tommy.
The other thing we got to fix is none of the interior lights work.
Great.
So you don't know how fast you're going.
At night, yeah.
All right, let's see.
We're also missing, look at that. That's worth $20,000 right there.
Yeah, so it does run pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah. My favorite part about this car is the previous owner put these MagnaFlow pipes on it.
Yeah.
And it's got a great little growl.
It does.
Yeah, all right, it's really good.
Let's finish up because we're running out of time here. How long are we into this, Cole?
45 minutes.
Oh, 45 minutes already. This is going to be a long one. So this is our World War II Willys, or do you say Willys?
Willys, yeah.
Willys or Willys Jeep. Love this thing. I don't think we're ever going to sell it. It was very well restored, obviously. So we bought this on Ring a Trailer for like $22,000 restored. Mm-hmm. For a long time, when I was a kid, you could get these for Lollipop. People were selling them. You can go on like to a comic book, and these were still sold in crates for like $500 because mm-hmm. they're still around. Now those ones in crates are incredibly valuable if you could actually find one. But a fully restored one, look, where else are you going to get another one, right?
Yeah,
most of these are in museums. And this thing runs and drives. We did have an issue with the carburetor.
Yeah, so I it's a long story, but the float had failed in the carburetor. So I pulled the carburetor apart, and then I went to buy a new float, which was totally the wrong size. I couldn't get the original brass float. So I soldered the brass float, and now it should be good. It's been running really good, actually.
And the engine's rebuilt, so...
Yeah, it's got the Go Devil in it still. This car's been really, really well restored.
Jeep, like, Tommy, Jeep.
Well, you can see, like, even the all the wiring is kind of that cool braided stuff they used back in the 40s. So this is a really nice example. And we actually do use it off-road sometimes, which is why it's a little dirty underneath this.
Yeah, hood. Just take it to Moab.
Yeah, but it's such a little beast off-road. It's the only problem with these is they're pretty slow. So for, like, the country roads around here, when you're trying to do... Most people are doing 55, right?
Yeah.
This thing is happy at like 38.
But I could see why people fall in love with the flat fenders.
Yeah, dude, they're awesome. These things are really, really cool.
And in a way, these World War II ones are almost too valuable to seriously off-road. But I was just watching on Facebook where people are commonly off-roading the CJ3s, right? The civilian Jeep versions of these, mm-hmm. the flat fender ones.
Yeah, and they do really crazy stuff with them too.
They do.
So this is my Mercedes. This is my wedding car, so I'm stuck with it forever. And we had a fun adventure in this, actually, where we
You really want to switch those wheels out, huh?
Well, I do like these wheels a lot, but I want to see what they look like on the originals. But we had a nice adventure with this car. We took it up to, where did we go with this? A Basin. We did a rally with this car this year.
Yep.
And then I just had a couple little things fixed on it, but it's been perfectly reliable. So this is, I think we've owned this now for 3 years or almost three years.
This is another car, like the Viper, which unfortunately isn't here, that is undervalued. So this car... is the pillarless coupe, or, mm-hmm. or do you say coupe? It's got the six-cylinder, and it's a very sexy car, and yet these cars are $12,000 all day long.
Yep, and they will always be $12,000. Like, they don't appreciate. They're immune to appreciation, which is not great for long-term. But what I like about this one is it's kind of a base model, so it's got the carburetors instead of the mechanical fuel injection. And like I said, I mean, it's been perfectly reliable. The only issue is it had its AC ripped out of it at some point. And it's very hot in the summer, so
didn't we get the AC with it?
Yeah, but it's a.
You're not going to put it back in.
That's a big job. And then last little guy over here is the K truck. Look at the K truck. This has been our little gardening truck. So my wife got really into gardening this year.
Yeah.
And this thing, we've loaded up like to the head height with dirt.
Yeah.
So I've had this thing fully maxed out on payload, where it's on its bump stops. And it will go anywhere. The cool thing about these K-trucks is that they're all-wheel drive in this case.
This is a Honda Acty.
Yeah, it's got a low first gear. So with the low first gear, even at max payload, you can take this thing like deep into the woods back there, and it just keeps going.
And the sides come off. And tell them what you did when you filled it up with the oil.
Oh, yeah. I think I talked about this on a podcast. So there's two exterior caps on this thing. There's one on the back and one on the side. And I swear when I went to fill this up with a jerry can that I put gasoline into the gas cap, but I put 5 gallons right into the oil
cap. So he filled up the oil with gas, and then we came back into the barn, and there was a slurry all over the place where the truck had actually convulsed and got rid of it. And then we emptied up the oil, put fresh oil in, and it's fine. That's incredible.
The only problem with this truck, which we might be able to change in a couple of years, is...
It doesn't have a license plate.
Yeah, so up until now, you couldn't register these in Colorado, but starting in 2027, there's been a new law saying you can. So maybe in next year, or 2 years from now, I guess, we'll be able to get this thing plated.
And why don't you show them where the engine is? It's right here. It's kind of cool. It's mid-engine, Tommy.
Yeah, you got your little plate down there. It's a little three-cylinder, 60cc engine.
Yeah.
It actually does 55-60, just not very very well at the ranch because there's no place to do it, but it's pretty fast.
My problem with it is I don't fit.
You fit okay.
I kind of fit.
Yeah, you sort of fit.
I sort of fit, especially in the passenger side. With the steering wheel, it's pretty much into my big belly.
They're super, super easy to drive, though. So,
It's a good one to learn stick shift on.
Yeah, it's a really fun little truck, so I'm excited to hopefully register this someday.
You want to show them your latest and greatest purchase?
No, that one... I'll do a teaser, but that one we've got a full video coming up with.
You can show them, Tommy. They'll be looking forward to seeing the video.
So I bought the cheapest running and driving Toyota in the USA, I think. This is not his best angle coming up on the back. But what we're looking at here is my brand new 1992 Toyota Tercel. So this is a green little blob with 82 horsepower and a 4-speed manual. And it's not in the greatest shape, I'll admit. It needs some paint work and it's had a bit of a dent there, and everybody at the office hates it. But I actually think it's an excellent machine. This was $700 and it only has 97,000 miles. I bought it out of the public auction at Peak Auto Auctions. Now granted, there's a couple things that aren't so good about it. For example, the seat is made out of duct tape, which is not my favorite type of upholstery. And that's the only problem with it, other than the fact that there's been a slight accident at the back of the car. But it's been awesome.
Well, how about the wheels, the tires, the paint?
The tires are fine. Ugh. It runs pretty good. It drives really well. So I've got a little series coming around, Carry the Tercel. So be sure to stay tuned for that.
Well, there you guys have it.
No, we got one more.
Oh, there's one more. That's right. There is one more.
The coolest car you're missing here.
The coolest car that we own, yeah.
Boom. Our Model T, we still have it. It's actually, it's going under the knife a little bit. I just sent the windshield out to go be replaced because you can't buy Model T windshields, you have to make them. So that cracked. And I also just ordered bands for this transmission, so we're going to put some new bands in it.
It's a 27, right?
Yeah, and it's been so unbelievably reliable.
So we had, what, three of them at one point?
Two of them,
yeah.
So we had two T's and an A.
Yeah.
And this thing's been to the top of Pikes Peak. We drove it up to the top of Pikes Peak. I drive it around town quite a lot, and it never overheats. It never fails to start. It just works. It's such a cool
I don't think it's
truck.
An original pickup. I think somebody built the bed for it, which was common.
So you can see this would have been a roadster, essentially, with a little turtle deck back here. And then someone built a wood bed on it. But it means it's just more useful. It's fine. But these things are just such a fun. If you've never driven a Model T, find a friend or pay the $6,000 it takes to buy one of these, because they're awesome. And speaking of which, Dad, to pay for all of this insanity, we have had to sell some vehicles.
Oh, yeah. We've sold a lot of vehicles.
So the 4Runner is gone. So we sold the new TRD Off-Road.
Our Mercedes is gone. The one with half a million miles on it.
The 320 wagon has gone to our friend Andy, who's doing a little restoration on it.
Yeah.
What else did we sell? The Wrangler is sold.
Yep.
Sold the two-door Wrangler to buy the Bronco.
Ranger Raptor's gone.
The Ranger Raptor is sold.
The Cummins is gone.
The Cummins that left a little while ago.
Yeah.
And there's been some other stuff gone. I sold my diesel Mercedes and bring a trailer because I was just kind of done with that experience, and had some other stuff going on. So, yeah, there's been a lot of stuff leaving.
We have this rule usually one in, one out.
I don't think the Maverick's going to be with us much longer.
Yeah, probably. If you guys are looking for a Maverick, all-wheel drive hybrid with about 8,000 miles, that's one that we will be selling. And then because we've got so many different vehicles, we are building a barn.
That's
right. A second barn.
Wahoo!
Yeah.
So we got another little barn going in there. That one's going to be smaller and much, much, much more basic. But, yeah, we've got a little second barn going up there.
Yeah. So thank you guys for watching and thank you for listening. If you want to see some of these videos that we've referenced, just head on over to alltfl.com. Thank you for Cole for walking through us with this video. And we shall see you on the next one, right?
Yep. See you guys.
Ciao.